Have you been doing any spiritual readings of any kind?
That's the question, right? What would sort of count as spiritual readings? Because I suppose any reading I'm doing in some way, even if it's not kind of spiritual texts, I don't know. I sort of feel like it's always got that focus. There's always some sort of self-inquiry going on through it. But maybe we're back to, you know, the Enneagram 4 kind of kidding themselves that self-inquiry is happening when in fact all they're doing is just, I don't know, pushing their their psyche through the shredder of a text. I don't know. I mean, have I been, you know, have I been sitting down and cracking open any of the great ancient gurus and sages? I suppose no, I haven't in the last
or the new ones. And any new takes on anything like kind of overtly spiritual? Because everything is definitely spiritual. And like when I, you know, when I'm in the results of doing spiritual study, it's not like the spiritual things are more spiritual than the not spiritual things. Everything is spiritual because we're spirits. But it seems like in order to get like elevation results, like out of our lower self into our higher self, certain things are like far more effective than others.
Yeah, and I suppose the one thing that for me comes closest to that, I guess, are my kind of poetry koans, in the sense that I have this podcast called Poetry Koan, which is sort of me kind of like sitting and interrogating a poem like it's a kind of koan, like it holds some essential truth that I need to understand. And I guess that's, I mean, I am doing a couple of hours of sort of thinking and writing, I guess, around that every day.
No, that's cool.
I don't know. You see, this is the problem where it can, I think, very quickly sort of slip into kind of ego cage territory that I think I'm doing kind of like, you know, this great sort of Zen like koan work, whereas maybe I'm just, you know, traipsing around the chambers of my own, you know, the echoing chambers of my own solitary self, essentially, right?
What percentage of the time, I think of it almost what percentage of the time of that are you being directed towards the witnessing consciousness, or kind of like elevating out of your mind and into your awareness or being or spirit or something? Like, that is to me the criteria, that any percentage, that is the spiritual study part of anything.
Yeah.
And the time when you're thinking and stuff, it's not as much.
Well, maybe then it's not spiritual study at all, because I think it is just, it's you know, I think
there's no,
yeah, maybe I mean, I feel it's the reason why it comes up as a practice, as an idea of that kind of practice, I feel like it's always pointing towards a sort of truths or some kind of inherent wisdom, which it's sort of more of, I guess, a kind of a philosophical exercise. Let's call it that way, a kind of a philosophical meditation. And I don't know. I mean, I don't really know where that shades into what you're talking about, or if it maybe doesn't shade in at all.
Interesting. Like, you don't feel like it points to sort of like a transcendental experiencing, or points to some sort of witnessing or higher self type pointing, like where it's pointing to like, oh yeah, look at that, it's like the ego is doing this thing, and oh yeah, it's like a kind of a elevation,
I guess, so in the sense that if truth is higher than falsehood or delusion, then I suppose it's pointing towards truth. But then it's always pointing, as we know, through this, you know, mind that is particularly in my case, affected and altered by emotions and substances and all sorts of things. So so it is sometimes hard to know, right? That's what I sometimes think about. I guess that's why people need mentors, they need gurus to call them out on when their self-enlightening processes are, I don't know, not doing the proper job. But then the whole question is, well, who's appointed or anointed this guru to know that, right? That's the tricky side if one is not a guru follower, as it were.
Yeah, I mean, I think the sort of like you can kind of, you know, you could like Jesus is pretty solid. You could see how good the stuff is sort of aligning with Jesus, maybe, or like, you know, if there's someone you really like, I think Ramana seems really super solid. Like, I really feel like Ramana is on point. So, you know, and like, so if it lines up, I mean, to me, it's just kind of like, you know, we're spirits, and if we put the focus, and everything is made up. I feel like those are the only truths. The only truth really is that everything is
made up. I get the everything is like, made up, but but again, what do you mean by spirits? Because I don't really experience myself as a spirit. I experience myself as very much bogged down in the mud of the world, as it were, right? You know, in lots of ways, in the body, in the all of that stuff that's moving through us. So what do you mean when you say that you're a spirit, or that we're spirits?
We're the being, the same being that you were as like a kid, and like, you know, that we always have always been, and we actually both are, but you know, like, so the same being that you always, that we've always been, that's our being. Like, the being is there when we're not thinking. Like, it's, if you're not thinking, you're your being, you're not thinking, you know. As soon as you are thinking, you quickly, usually, unless you're very alert to your being while you're thinking, like right now, you know, feeling, being, I am here, and these are words that are coming from thought. But it quickly goes into like a me, an idea of a me, and then you're embodying the me, and that's like why we came here prior to Earth. You know, it's like what we created this whole situation. I guess, you know, this identification with a body, it's like part of this whole game that we're in. But it just seems like the more we are present, mind, you know, we're just being, which is like being present and not thinking, the better we feel, and everything turns close, more and more to heaven type experience, or like a Garden of Eden type experience. Just the more present we are, that's like, and you know, yeah, so that seems like that just kind of works that way. So like the being is just the thing we are when we're not thinking. It's like who we actually, like right now we are actually, like right now, like we are, and that's our being that is actually right now.
But it sounds like your being is of a more enlightened, lighter, because of which, you know, that word light again, lighter being than my being, right? My being feels like it's a sort of a more weighed down kind of being, which is maybe the same. It's the same material, but it you know, uh-huh. I do, yeah. It's I mean, I know what you mean. We are just more present.
Yeah, it's just like thoughts and some scars that like have you feel heavier, because right? You know, like your being, like when you know, like a, it's, yeah, it's like, it's, yeah, being is here now, and like weighed down is an idea, and even the experience, like if you felt into in a moment, which is the only thing that actually exists, like if we feel into the feeling of the weighed down, like right now, like if you know, like you feel into that, like, what is it actually? And your mind's like, blah, 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 but then it's like, no, shut up. It's like, okay, so like, what is this weighed down? Oh, yeah. Oh, does that exist? Weighed down. Okay, I feel this here, this here. It starts to like expand and you start to be like, okay, and like, wait, what? And it just like starts to be like, oh, yeah, shit, that's like, that's a, that doesn't exist. Like, it's actually a bunch of sensations. And when you feel, and when you're able to like, bash, stop just sort of feeling and aware and being. And then, like, those things expand in this, like, crazy trippy way into, like, they, when you actually look at this weighed down sensation, it starts to be like, oh, whoa. And, like, the reality of it, and you stop judging that it's bad because it doesn't feel what you think good should feel like. Then, like, that, even that bad can start to expand. And then all of a sudden, there's, like, a bliss that goes through the cracks when you, like, allow it to expand. And there's, like, a peace and bliss that, like, go through all, like, the spaces. But there are no spaces when you're always thinking and trying to resist the bad feeling and then thinking it's a matrix of like thoughts.
That's a really good that's a really, really good description of of what a kind of a, I suppose a core witnessing mindfulness practice would entail.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. Like, if something happens, like, during spiritual study, and then at first I'm like, oh, man, oh, I was feeling so peaceful, and now this happened. And then as I meditate, you know, it's like, oh, okay, how do I don't like it? And then what is it? Okay, I feel, you know, I'm here, and I'm... And then it's like some sort of sensation, and it's like, okay, but it seems like I really don't like this part of it's real. I don't like that. And it's like, but wait, okay. And then as you, like, allow it, it can start to, like, it starts to just, yeah, all just... It almost, and then it starts to, you doesn't even like exist. Like, all of a sudden you can just like look at your taste buds or look at something in the room and you're like, you forget about it. And you're like, wait, whoa, that's crazy. Like, it's actually sensations. It's not even real pain. It's in your imagination, you know? But it feels real until you are willing, until you have the like energy or willingness to like meditate like that, you know? So,
yeah. Yeah. Nice. Well, I feel you've kind of warmed us up for our reading, which is, what is it? Live Facts, Not Fancies? I think it's that one, or...
Ooh, let's see. I have it flipped open to Matter is Consciousness Itself.
Oh, okay. I think you're right. Yeah, I think it is that. Yes. All right.
Maybe we did Live Facts, Not Fancies last.
Yeah. So, I can't remember who's who this evening.
I think I'm Maharaj this time, right? Yeah,
great.
Matters Consciousness. Nice. I have some underlines in this, so it should have some
all
parts
right.
that are, at least I... think with my underlining brain is cool.
Let's go. So, Matter is Consciousness itself. I was lucky to have holy company all my life. Is it enough for self-realization?
It depends what you make of it.
Well, I was told that the liberating action of satsang is automatic, just like a river carries one to the estuary. So the subtle and silent influence of good people will take me to reality.
It will take you to the river, but the crossing is your own. Freedom cannot be gained nor kept without will to freedom. Freedom cannot be gained or kept without will to freedom. You must strive for liberation. The least you can do is uncover and remove the obstacles diligently. If you want peace, you must strive for it. You will not get peace just by keeping quiet.
Yeah, okay, but a child just grows. He does not make He does not make plans for growth, nor has he a pattern, nor does he grow by fragments. A hand here, leg there. I mean, he grows integrally. He grows unconsciously, right?
Because he is free of imagination. You can also grow like this, but you must not indulge in forecasts and plans born of memory and anticipation. It is one of the peculiarities of the Yani that he is not concerned with the future. Not concerned with the future. Your concern with future is due to fear of pain and desire for pleasure. To the Yani, all is bliss. He is happy with whatever comes.
But surely there are many things that would make even a Yani miserable.
Gnani may meet with difficulties, but they do not make him suffer. Bringing up a child from birth to maturity may seem a hard task, but to a mother the memories of hardships are a joy. There is nothing wrong with the world. What is wrong is in the way you look at it. It is your own imagination that misleads you. Without imagination, there is no world. Without imagination, there is no world. Your conviction that you are conscious of a world is the world. The world you perceive is made of consciousness. What you call matter is consciousness itself. You are the space in which it moves. The time in which it lasts, the love that gives it life. Cut off imagination and attachment, and what remains?
Well, the world remains, I remain.
Yes, but how different is it when you can see it as it is, not through the screen of desire and fear?
But why do we need all these distinctions? Reality, illusion, wisdom, ignorance, saint, sinner. Everyone is in search of happiness. Everyone strives desperately. Everyone is a yogi and his life is a school of wisdom. You know, determinism in a way, right? You know, we're each learning in our own way the lessons we need. Society approves of some of us, disapproves of others. There are no rules that apply everywhere and for all time and for all people.
In my world, love is the only law. I do not ask for love. I give it. Such is my nature.
Okay, well, I would ask for a definition of love, but seeing as that's not the question, I will also say, I see you living your life according to a pattern, right? You run a meditation class in the morning. You then lecture and have discussions regularly. Twice daily, there's worship and devotional singing. You adhere, right, to this routine scrupulously. This is what keeps you together. Is this love? I don't know.
The worship and the singing are as I found them, and I saw no reason to interfere. The general routine is according to the wishes of the people with whom I happen to live or who come to listen. They are working people with many obligations, and the timings are for their convenience. Some repetitive routine is inevitable. Even animals and plants have their timetables.
Okay, yes, we see a regular sequence in all life. Who maintains the order? Is there an inner ruler who lays down laws and enforces order?
Everything moves according to its nature. Where is the need of a policeman? Every action creates a reaction with which balances and neutralizes the action. Everything happens, but there is a continuous canceling out. And in the end, it is as if nothing had happened.
Okay. Do not console me with final harmonies, you know. The accounts tally, but the loss is mine.
Wait and see. You may end up with a profit good enough to justify the outlays.
Well, there is a long life behind me, and I often wonder whether its many events took place by accident, or if there was a plan. Was there a pattern laid down before I was born by which I had to live my life? Right? If yes, who made the plans? Who enforced them? Could there be deviations? Could there be mistakes? Some say destiny is immutable and every second of life is predetermined, right? Others say that pure accident decides everything.
You can have it as you like. You can distinguish in your life a pattern or see merely a chain of accidents. Explanations are meant to please the mind. Explanations are meant to please the mind. They need not be true. Reality is indefinable and indescribable.
Oh, I don't know, sir. Forgive me, but you are escaping my questions. I want to know how you look at it. Right? I don't want to know the... I don't want to know the dogma, as it were. I want to know how you look at it. Wherever we look, we find a structure of unbelievable intelligence and beauty. How can I believe that the universe is formless and chaotic? Your world, the world in which you live, may be formless, but it need not be chaotic.
The objective universe has structure. Is orderly and beautiful. Nobody can deny it. But structure and pattern imply constraint and compulsion. Structure and pattern imply constraint and compulsion. My world is absolutely free. Everything in it is self-determined. Therefore, I keep on saying that all happens by itself. There is order in my world too, but it is not imposed from the outside, or the pretend outside. It comes spontaneously and immediately because of its timelessness. Perfection is not in the future. It is now. Perfection is not in the future. It is now.
Okay, but that's all happening for you. Does your world affect mine?
At one point only, at the point of the now, it gives momentary being a fleeting sense of reality. In full awareness, the contact is established. It needs effortless, unself-conscious attention.
But is not attention, I don't know, is it not just an attitude of mind?
Yes, when the mind is eager for reality, it gives attention. There is nothing wrong with your world. It is your thinking yourself to be separate from it that creates disorder. Thinking yourself to be separate from the world that creates disorder. Selfishness is... the source of all evil.
Okay. Well, let me come back to my question. Before I was born, did my inner self decide the details of my life, or was it entirely accidental and just at the mercy of heredity, circumstances, that kind of thing?
Those who claim to have selected their father and mother and decided how they are going to live their next life may know for themselves. I know for myself. I was never born.
You were never born, but I see you sitting in front of me replying to my questions.
Yeah, the born part is imagined, though.
Huh.
Well, at least it's not happening right now. Mm. I mean, where is born? It's only in our imagination. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So you were never born. And basically you're saying, well, I'm just seeing a body, which, if, you know, which, and that was born, that will die, but that's not you. Okay. So, question. It is the life story of this body and mind, I guess, that I am interested in, right? Was it laid down by you, or was it laid down by somebody else, or did it just happen accidentally?
There is a catch in your very question. I make no distinction between the body and the universe. Each is the cause of the other. Each is the other in truth. But I am out of it all. When I am telling you that I was never born, why go and ask me what were my preparations for the next birth? The moment you allow your imagination to spin, it at once spins out a universe. It is not at all as you imagine, and I am not bound by your imaginings.
Well, yeah, I mean, it requires intelligence and energy to build and maintain a living body at some level. Where do these come from?
There's only imagination. The intelligence and power are all used up in your imagination. It has absorbed you so completely that you just cannot grasp how far from reality you have wandered. No doubt, imagination is richly creative. Richly creative. Universe within universe are built on it. Yet they are all in space and time, past and future, which don't exist.
Yes, that is very true. Imagination has absorbed me completely, indeed. I have read recently a report about a little girl, right, who was very cruelly handled in her early childhood. She was badly mutilated, she was disfigured, she grew up in an orphanage, completely estranged from her surroundings. And this little girl was quiet and obedient, but kind of indifferent to it, right? So one of the nuns who was looking after the children was convinced that the girl was not mentally retarded, but just, you know, withdrawn, irresponsive. So a psychoanalyst was asked to take up the case, and for 2 full years, he would see the child once a week and just sort of try and break the wall of isolation. She was docile, well-behaved, but would give no attention to the doctor. He brought her a toy house with rooms, movable furniture, dolls representing father, mother, children. And this brought out a response. The girl, you know, became a bit more interested. And then one day these old hurts revived and they came to the surface. And gradually she recovered a number of operations, brought back her face and body to normal, grew into an efficient, attractive young woman. It took the doctor more than 5 years, but the work was done, right? You could say that he was a real guru. He did not put down conditions nor talk about readiness and eligibility. Without faith, without hope, out of love only, he tried and tried again.
Yes, that is the nature of a guru. He will never give up. But to succeed, he must not be met with too much resistance. Doubt and disobedience necessarily delay. Given confidence and pliability, he can bring about a radical change in the disciple speedily. Deep insight in the guru and earnestness in the disciple are both needed. Whatever was her condition, the girl in your story suffered for lack of earnestness in people. The most difficult are the intellectuals. They talk a lot, but are not serious. What you call realization is a natural thing. When you are ready, the guru will be waiting. Sadhana is effortless. Okay. When the relationship with your teacher is right, you grow. Above all, trust him. He cannot mislead you.
But yeah, even when he asks me to do something that is patently wrong,
do it. A sannyasi
like
has
suck his dick, for example. I mean, what, you know, like, yeah, right. What, really, yeah. Anything. Anything he asks.
Yeah. Yeah, this is, yeah, that's, I rarely think things could be problem. That's a little weird. I guess, you know, in this, I'm sure he was speaking to one specific person and he felt that they could handle it, I would imagine.
Oh, like, yeah, no, totally, sure. Yeah.
Because that wouldn't be the right advice to give to someone who is kind of like very naive or very like, you know. A sannyasi has been asked by his guru to marry. He obeyed and suffered bitterly, but his four children were all saints and seers, the greatest in Mahabharata. Be happy with whatever comes from your guru and you will grow to perfection without striving. I don't know about without striving, but okay, it's interesting to this person. This is evidently, yeah.
Okay. But do you, sir, do you have any wants or wishes? I mean, can I do anything for you? Is there anything you would want from me?
What can you give me that I don't already have? Material things are needed for contentment, but I am contented with myself. What else do I need?
Surely when you are hungry, you need food, and when you are sick, you need medicine.
Hunger brings the food, and illness brings the medicine. It is all nature's work.
If I bring something I believe you need, would you accept it?
The love that made you offer will make me accept.
Okay. Somebody offers to build you a beautiful ashram.
Let him, by all means. Let him spend a fortune, employ hundreds, feed thousands.
But it's not a desire for you.
Not at all. I'm only asking him to do it properly, not stingily, half-heartedly. He is fulfilling his own desire, not mine. Let him do it well and be famous among men and gods, lowercase g.
But do you... So there's nothing in you that wants it.
I do not want it.
You accept it?
I don't need
it. Will
you
stay in it?
If I'm compelled.
And what would compel you?
Love of those in search of light.
Okay. I see your points. Now, how am I to go into samadhi?
If you are in the right state, however you see will put you into samadhi. After all, samadhi is nothing unusual. When the mind is intensely interested, it becomes one with the object of interest. The seer and the seen become one in seeing. The seer and the seen become one in seeing. The hearer and the heard become one in hearing. The lover and the loved become one in loving. Every experience can be the ground for samadhi.
Are you always in the state of samadhi?
Of course not. Samadhi is a state of mind, after all. I am beyond all experience, even of samadhi. I am the great devourer and destroyer. Whatever I touch dissolves into void.
Yeah, well, I realize that I need samadhis for self-realization.
You have all the self-realization you need, but you do not trust it. Have courage, trust yourself. Go, talk, act, give it a chance to prove itself. With some, realization comes imperceptibly, but somehow they need convincing. They have changed, but they do not notice it. Such non-spectacular cases are often the most reliable.
Can a person believe themselves to be realized and then be mistaken?
Yeah, of course. The very idea, I am self-realized, is a mistake. There is no I am this, I am that in the natural state. Nice. It's good.
Yeah, so I'm interested to know whether your underlinings match my underlinings, because I have it's quite a long one, but I have about maybe five things that I felt the pen felt drawn to underline. I'm interested to know what your pen felt drawn to.
Okay, I think I have 8. Yeah, so should we like go backwards or forwards?
Whichever.
We could go backwards, I guess. I love the last line, actually. Of course, the very idea, I am self-realized, is a mistake. There is no I am this, I am that in the natural state.
What is your understanding of that? Because again, that could almost seem like a kind of, you know, like he... Right, that it's almost like they're playing a certain kind of chess in a way, and he just finally just vanishes right at the end, but going, well, it's all an illusion, bye bye, woo, and off he goes, right?
Wow, oh, interesting. So,
what do you actually understand by that line? Like, yeah.
So, in my experience, it's like, when I'm I'm probably never as his advancement level, but like, you know, close, then it's too like on the nose to say, because it's not you who are enlightened or anything. It's not like you who are anything. Like it's the being is seeing through the pretend you. So as soon as you say I am something, you're not the enlightened. Yeah. That it's like not even, it doesn't work that way.
It's like somebody, on Hinge, sometimes people will say I am funny. And it's like one of those things which is like, no, sorry. If you genuinely are funny, you don't tell other people you're funny. It's just one of those things. Yeah. It's one of those things that other people get to find out, right? And they go, you're funny, but you can't. It just immediately almost occludes you from that category. Sorry.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I know. I 100%. I think both that's a funny like analogy with like that kind of thing. Yeah, it's true. That is true as well. Usually like, or you can, I'm really trustworthy. I'm just like, oh my God, like, I'm definitely not trusting them with anything. Yeah. So that's true. I mean, I think it's similar. It could be the same, but it's like, but it does relate to like the subtlety of the seeing of the thing, the being that is real. It's your being, and it's the I is the thing it's witnessing. It's, it would never be I am.
Yeah, the I is no longer an egoic I. It is more like an I, capital I. It is more an EYEI, right? It's sort of this.
Ooh, love it. Yep. So I don't have anything else on these two pages. Did you have any of this short back and forth thing underlined?
I really like the Maharaja's sort of fighting words. These feel very much again like the T-shirt moment to me. Have courage, trust yourself, go, talk, act, give it a chance. Ooh. To prove yourself. With some, realization comes imperceptibly, but somehow they need convincing.
Mm-hmm.
I, I f- Yeah, I felt particularly this like idea of having courage, trust yourself, go, talk, act, give it a chance.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's very sort of rousing words. I think harder, easier said than done. And so mm-hmm. then the question still for me remains, well, maybe the will to do overrides, right, the fighting talk. Because one might hear the fighting talk, but then not be roused to actually, you know, I might hear this fighting talk and go, God damn it, that is great advice. But then I might not wake up tomorrow and carry it out, right?
Yeah, that's the problem with that kind of thing to me. Sometimes it's very hard to, like, yeah, I mean, I like, to do anything. Like, I can, you know, it's just, you know, it's barely can, yeah, it's so to have courage, trust you, it's like, okay, I mean, you know, each one of those things takes, like, you know, 10 years of inner work to develop. It's like, you know,
right.
if you want to
yeah,
trust
I think,
yourself.
I think that's true.
Yeah, that's
yeah,
like,
these,
yeah.
These do, the yeah, there is a lot of process in each of these things. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's my, I sometimes don't, I like, if something's telling me too many things to do, I just almost, I just sort of almost ignore it because I'm like, oh man, I just know life gets, like, if I can, there's just one simple thing I can just remember, then maybe I have some chance of, like, transcending the already gonna happen life situation and, like, you know, like, in some just very simple pointer. And so I'm always looking for that, like, pointer that's just, like, the thing that the other thing I underlined here with the, like, that it's not, you would never say, anytime you're thinking, like, you know, oh, look at this, I'm having this great experience now, or this is great, I have to remember to, what, it's, like, wrong immediately. Like, anything like that. I just earlier was having some cool, like, thing, and I was like, oh, and then immediately, and pretty soon, I'm like, okay, I have to try to control it, and it's like, oh, no, that's immediately already wrong. If it's something you're starting to be like, I want, or it's, any controlling is like an I that's doing it.
Yeah, and that was the other thing I underlined in the back and forth, this line, hunger brings the food and illness brings the medicine. It's not, there is no I there, right? He's not saying, I get hungry and then I either search out food or, right? Because there is, I guess, an I there in the sense that if he gets hungry, it's not like he then, I don't know, goes for a walk for 5 hours, or he might. There is a he, yeah, an I that does. But he's sort of saying, well, maybe at another level, why even bring the I into it? Hunger brings the food, illness brings the medicine, if there is medicine, and don't get involved in that, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, I think he's also pointing to, with that, it's almost, you know, whether that one, it's like, you know, whether it's, like, true or, like, it's kind of an important way to think about it if you want to have the, like, you know, advanced levels, these type of spiritual things. Of course, like, that kind of, like, just trust thing, it's like, it's sort of pretty much key. And sometimes you end up with some funny results from that. But yeah, it's like, but yeah, it's beautiful.
But maybe he's also talking like a 1950s, a kind of, Indian patriarch, right? Which is kind of like, yeah, hunger brings the food. What he really means is that when I'm hungry, my wife makes me some food, right? Probably. I would imagine,
yeah,
right? When I'm hungry, my wife or one of the people in our community, particularly because I'm an esteemed member of it, definitely, but that's how we look after each other. And but that is not the environment that we're now in anymore, most of us, right?
Yeah.
Because when I'm hungry, no one brings me any damn food. I can go, oh, I'm so hungry, and nothing happens unless a sort of an eye-focused part of me, you know, goes out and tries to find some food. Right?
That's funny. I mean, it probably would happen without event, but like, can I do a little funny, little kind of a mini story around topic? So like, okay, so I was visiting my dad who lives in Maui a bunch of years ago, and I had just done a lot of spiritual stuff actually, including at a yoga school place, and I was really just floating, and we were going to some sort of event, and it was not like a food event, it was like a kirtan or something, and I was like, we don't have to get food, like, I'll be fine, like, there'll be something there, or, like, whatever, it doesn't matter, it'll be fine, like, it'd be great, like, this is amazing, everything is amazing, like, I don't need, the food will manifest, and my dad and his girlfriend were like, okay, like, we're gonna get you food, because, like, okay, I know, manifest boy over here, but we'll just stop and get some food, because there's not gonna be food at this event. And I'm like, I mean, I'm telling you, it's just not necessary. It's like, you don't have to think about it. And then we stopped, and I actually, what I felt to get was a pint of ice cream. So I just got a pint of ice cream. This is all like a little, you know, you don't have to be so silly in these, but I was just going with the flow.
You're having some fun. Yeah, yeah.
And I got a pint of ice cream. We went to this event, and then I ate the ice cream and hadn't eaten dinner, just ate like a bunch of a pint of ice cream, and it's like bed the little dance kirtan thing, and I got a stomach ache. So like, because I ate ice cream for dinner, and so I have a stomach ache, right? And so I'm like, oh. And then like and then this girl that I know from another year, is this very lovely girl, really spiritual girl, comes, and we were friends in Thailand the previous year, and I was like, oh, hey, you know, oh my god, and I was like, I have a stomach ache, like, what do you think I should do? And she's like, oh, okay, I can probably help, like, here, just lie down. And then I like lied down just on off to the side of the event thing, and then she did like Reiki on me to like heal the stomach ache, and it was so cool, like the heal, like, it, you know, I'm not always that into Reiki, but it was amazing. She has amazing energy, and it totally healed the stomach ache. So it was like very magical and cool, and like, it was the best experience I ever had with her, and we had hung out many times over the previous time. It was like very cool to kind of be in a, have an actual thing, a stomach ache, and then she went into a healing mode, and that was a beautiful dynamic. So like, something can happen, you know, like, that's just not being in the like doing mentality. It was just, you end up in magical situations a lot of the times, I think, as long as you don't die. Then, like, you know.
Yeah, and I guess that's sort of going with that sort of trusting, which you were able to do because you were in a trusting space, that trusting of the universe, that, oh, okay, well, even if this thing happens that doesn't really fit the narrative of what a good night out would be, which is, you know, you get a stomach ache from eating ice cream, that something follows from that, and that thing then has another opportunity to manifest as good, in inverted commas, or bad, right?
Yeah, usually I feel like a lot of the time it's like better than the alternative, as long as you don't go too far or get too crazy about it. You have to keep a little bit, or someone has to keep a little bit, because, you know, like, a really happy crazy child is gonna, it has the parent to keep them safe, so you have to have like a little bit of something turned on in that space in order to just make sure you're not doing anything that's obviously, because the real dangers are pretty obvious usually. It's usually like, you know, yeah, if you're going into like a street, or if you're going onto like a, you know, there's certain activities that are actually dangerous, and you know, like, that discernment is important, or, you know, because that's kind of regardless, but sometimes God, who knows, but yeah, like, you know, the discernment can be important in those situations probably. But seems like people, when you're on a good vibe, though, beautiful things seem to like help with that. But yeah.
Let's move towards winding down, but how about giving us maybe what you felt, giving us one more underline, one more thing that you kind of thought was worth staining the page to have.
Let's see. Okay. I really love this, actually. Like, it's not at all, like, this whole thing about imagination. I think that's, I don't know if this is where it came from. I've really been having imagination, like, I'm like, wow, like, the imagination is so cool. Like, it's amazing. Like, our ability to imagine is so cool and magical. Like, you can imagine all types of stuff, you know? It's, like, so wild that we can do that. And, like, you know, like, but the downside of that is that then we imagine, we our identity or whatever, somehow work that we imagine ourselves to be the person we imagine really. Like, we imagine, and then we, like, some, for some reason, that's our little, like, human dysfunction, ego. It's like, we imagine that our imagining about ourselves, because it's so cool and vivid, is true, when it's never true. It's always an imagination. The only reality is now, and the imagination is an imagination. It's just never real. It's always
that's
imagination.
True.
So I think that's cool,
true.
The way you talk.
But I guess when we talk about imagination, we imagine a sort of a momentary, you know, conceptualization going on. Whereas I think what I feel you're talking about more so, or rather what in a way maybe is linked to this but might also point to why it's very difficult to break out of that matrix, is maybe the more the word story, right? Because I get a sense that, you know, our identity, I mean, everything is basically story, but our identity are ultimately very storied elements. I mean, we have very few memories, for example, most people, of their childhood, like maybe, I don't know, 4 or 5 really clear memories. And even those, who's to know if those really were, you know, or maybe, or also just a story, right? Which have now impregnated these memories. But the problem is that because, I guess, for want of a better word, it might be really, really scary to not have a story, to, in other words, not have any identity, you know, ego death, I guess, right? We will cling on to those stories no matter what. And I have to hold my hand up and say that I am you know, fairly guilty of doing that, because I think particularly the Enneagram 4 is one of the worst contenders for that. We get the freaking gold medals in holding on to those stories, or interrogating those stories, or, I don't know, getting very entangled in those stories. And it's really difficult because it's you can clamber out of imagination. Like, you can point and go, oh, that's just like a weird, I don't know, thought or whatever, right? But once that whole thought structure, that whole imagination structure has built into the story, and the story is like the Truman Show, right? I mean, it's sort of like everything's in place to signal to something else. It becomes really, really tricky to step out of that.
Yeah, super tricky. Of course, it's the whole that's right. That's the whole thing for everybody, and that is that, you know, like, it's all synced up, and you've, you know, created this whole, like, you know, thing. But it's not the, like, you know, it's just, yeah, like, as you work at it, you know, which is what, like, to me, like, all the meditation and spiritual stuff is, you're sort of just, like, remembering that, like, that stuff is a story, and it's like you're real. You actually exist right now, and then the story is a story, and, like, that's not it doesn't mean anything. You don't have to, like, go crazy with that. You don't have to trip out necessarily. To me, it's just remember, take your time, there's no rush, just, like, remind yourself over the course of years, and just, like, oh yeah, that's a story, and I'm actually real, And then no need to be like, oh my God, everything is like on a psychedelic. Like, it's like, it's just a little bit like, oh yeah, wait, wait, oh right, I'm actually here. And the story is the story. And then anytime
but that's the void into which the, let's call it the Enneagram 4, really falls. Because that's just a story, but I'm actually here. I think there is something in the 4 that is so doubtful. I mean, he says that at one point, he says doubt and disobedience, right? And I think we have this in space. Doubt and disobedience necessarily delay, right? But certainly there's a deep doubt.
Yeah.
So to give you a flavor of that doubt, like from a like a 4 perspective, a 4 would say to what you've just said, okay, but then how do you know when you're stepping out of like the, you know, the matrix or something, you're stepping out of the Truman Show, you're stepping out of the fake story, the ego story. How do you know then, let's say when you step into this, let's call it a spiritual, a more spiritual story in a way, or set of signifiers, how do you know that that's not just another story, that you're still trapped in a story, albeit maybe a more pleasant one? Is it just that you are, that you then benefit from being in a better story by feeling better and just having more of those good things that we're all seeking?
Yeah, totally. Yeah, it's like, so you just, I think you, as you get clear that the story is a story and you're actually here, you just start to like, you start to subconsciously, you like make up, because we have to make up a story until we're enlightened. So in the meantime, like until, you know, which is, you know, most people will never be, and you know, it'll be at least a long time. So like, so you know, in the meantime, you're just, the more you do that, the more you realize the story. So your subconscious be like, oh, okay, well, maybe I should maybe make that story up a little differently. And you start to like make up a little differently. All of a sudden you're realizing it's a story. And so it's not real, and just a little bit, your subconscious starts to weave together a more and more pleasant story, until, A Course in Miracles says, like, it gets to be a happier and happier dream until you wake up. And, like, not always the case. Some people, it's like, there's all kinds of crazy, like, you know, outlying
things. But how do we know that you wake up and then you're still in the happy dream? Or that you wake up, but then you're then look and go, oh well, that was just another story, right?
I mean, it's like, so in that, like in that awakened thing, it's like, it's just like, it's like the world is actually like a utopia, because it's not the when you're not, when there's no problems. And problems are all like made up, then actually we just like live in this place with all these crazy flowers and foods and smells and people, and it's all like amazing. So like, it's actually like, you know, it is like the king, you know, the heaven with it, you know, it's like that is the experience. But it's not almost even an experience, because it's like you can't even like, it's your mind is not fully, it's like you're transcending everything. So it's a very optimal experience, you know, like thing, but it doesn't even, I mean, like, I don't, there's not too much to even, it doesn't like, it's not like practical or anything. It's just very, you know, it's like, if you want to like experience heaven on earth, then that's the way. Or drugs, like hardcore drugs, but that's so dangerous. And this one isn't so dangerous. And it's if you're inclined to that, and you know, and you don't have to go all the way there either. You can just do less and just feel better by being more aware that the stories are stories, you're here. And then your subconscious will start weaving nicer stories, because if they're made up, may as well make nicer stories. So it seems like that sort of meditation can do that. Just like, oh yeah, maybe I'll make up this story. You can even put in your own story if you want to try to. Like, I'm going to think of it this way. That's a, you know, the whole like positive thinking manifestation thing. That has effects too.
But then what happens with these stories then when they then hit the rubber of, I don't know, reality, for want of a better word, which is... having a certain socioeconomic position, being a certain person in a society that is set up in a certain way, living within certain, you know, weather zones. I mean, all of these, again, all of these incredibly multiple factors that do shape our lives as kind of human creatures, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, how does, at some level, how does just having a better story, you know, get one through all of those potentially trying and tricky factors?
Well, I think that they're not like, so we're, you know, like, there's some sort of like base thing, you know, for your body that's happening, like your environment and stuff, but it's super duper malleable how you experience it. Like, picture like a baby is having probably like a really, you know, or like a little tiny, a little kid, a little like 2 year old or 3 year old. Like, there, it's like, even as an adult, no matter where you live, like it's gonna have effects on you, but the way you are processing it is gonna change it super dramatically. Like, if you all of a sudden find Jesus or whatever, and you just, they're like, and just, they're like, you know, and you all of a sudden, you can just start to like see through this like construct that society is pointing to, and the more you can see through that and all of a sudden be like, holy shit, like I have legs, like, and like, you know, have just appreciate whatever is happening in your situation. You know, because people are enlightened, you know, super happy in India. That's a great thing about going to India, is like, you go in, there's some like so happy people that literally just live with their whole families in like, had like sharing a bed, and they just like eat chapatis and like a dal like once or twice a day, and they just just trash everywhere, and they're psyched. It's wonderful there, like in a lot of places. It's not depressing unless you're really caught on like the details of the external, but they're super happy, smiling with just 10 teeth or whatever, you know, just like people. It's great. Like, it's not, they're not less happy than here. It's similar, very similar happiness, like, and then the conditions are way worse. So it's like, you know, when is the it's like, it's not, it's just not how our minds think it is, or the way the world seems to like point to this sort of thing that's just not really, like, we're actually in like basically the Garden of Eden. But you can just,
well, this is the problem with the human mind. This is the old hedonic treadmill thing, right? That yeah, it's the Garden of Eden for a day or two, but then it's just like, oh well, yeah, there's just that, right? And it's infuriating, because it's not like we've chosen that. You just have this you know, just that satiation factor just goes down. And then you need extra stimulation. And again, if that is not seen through, then it becomes compulsive and tyrannical, I suppose.
Yeah, it's not going to ever be enough. Like, it's already enough for anyone listening to this, probably. So it's like, you're not gonna, you know, it's cool, you can do cool stuff, it's great, you know, that's kind of cool. But like, for happiness, if happiness is what you're interested in, feeling good and joyful and peaceful and stuff like that, then that is, comes from the perspective of having a better story that's going of what you're witnessing, because you're just sort of seeing a bazillion things and, you know, feeling a lot of sensations and like how you're interpreting them, and like having all of that come together for you and your experience is the story, and that is going to give you drastically different experiences. So like,
cool. Well, I think that's what we should call this episode: having a better story. And on that note, I'm going to take my storied self off and have some dinner. But
enjoy.
Good chatting with you. Thank you.
Good to talk to you. Yeah. All right, talk to you soon.
Cheers. Bye.
Bye. Bye. See ya. One more time.
aside from what we left unsaid. And here we go, brave enough to go climbing a wall so high that no sunlight is seen through it. Brave enough to go traveling around the world without money to eat or sleep for. Seeing what you can do with your hands and feet, I feel there is no question about it. Almost anything we can imagine, almost any goal you will get there. I wish you had been more of a talker, not the kind that is just slapping his lips, and not the kind that looks so rebellious through his eyes when somebody's watching. Maybe you could have told me there was a world on your shoulders that needed lifting. Maybe I could have helped you with that. The weight is not easy, I know, but you never know. I thought your shoes were good. I thought they would take you to the end of any road. I thought your back was strong. I should have carried you to the top of the rocket train.
Carried you to the top of the rocket train.
I should have carried you to the top of the rocket train. How am I to know about your problems and your load? I am blind to what you show. I am waiting to be told. I never ask how am I to know about your problems and your load. I am blind to what you show.